Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The R word, recession, is getting a big workout lately. Some economists say it's already here. Goldman Sachs now says it's here or coming soon. With unemployment up and gas prices too, you may not need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. This hour on Point, we're talking recession. Are we in it? Who gets hurt? And what are the options for the U.S. economy now? Joining me first today from Washington to look at the darkening economic outlook is Greg Ipp. He is chief economic correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. He's also the lead writer for the blog Real Time Economics. Greg Ipp, great to have you with us. What do you see out there? What's got everybody's attention?
Well, Tom, there's a lot of stuff out there that is pretty consistent with our historic experience of the entry point into a recession. Let's just recap a little bit. What are the things you often see in a recession? You see the stock market going down, you see the housing market slumping, and you see unemployment going up. And we certainly saw the stock market coming down over most of the second half of last year, and housing has been mired in a slump since the middle of 2006. And then in December, we got the very unpleasant news that there was a big jump in the unemployment rate. And the economists who slice and dice this data say that the extent of the increase in unemployment that we have now experienced has been similar to what we've seen before every single recession we've had since World War II. So you add all that up, and it does kind of look like we're going to have a recession. But before you sort of like rush to assume that that's a done deal, there are reasons to think that maybe we'll escape it this time. For example, the Fed is lowering interest rates, and the Fed does have a lot of firepower left. Long-term interest rates are already quite low, and those things are very positive for consumption, and they'll provide some cushion to housing. Just this morning, the Labor Department reported that there was another big drop in first-time claims for unemployment insurance, and that's a little surprising given the weakness in the job market that we saw in December, and is not entirely consistent with the expectation of a recession. And finally, the rest of the world seems to be still doing reasonably well, and demand for U.S. exports is quite strong, especially given the decline in the dollar that's gone on in the last year, which makes U.S. exports more competitive.
Greg, you're talking about indicators we see when we may be going into a recession. What about this big debate itself about whether or not we're in it or headed into it? Is that typical, or is there something more mysterious about the direction of things this time?
Oh, definitely, Tom. At turning points in the economy, there's always a raging debate about whether we're at such a turning point, whether we're going into recession or whether we're not. That in itself doesn't actually resolve the debate, because there are times when people thought that it might happen and it didn't happen. For example, that was the case in 84, that was the case in 1995, 96. And we look back at those periods, we see a pronounced slowing in the economy but no recession. That we call those now soft landings. And it's possible the same thing will happen this time.
Goldman Sachs, in their comments this week, said, yes, second and third quarter, a couple of quarters of recession and out. The implication, it will be a mild recession. Is there reason to believe that, Greg?
Oh, sure. I mean, most of the recessions that we've had in recent decades have been mild. In fact, the scorekeepers at the National Bureau of Economic Research, who track these things, basically chalk up the recessions of 1990-91 and of 2001 as two of the mildest that on record. And one of the reasons why is that in both those recessions, we started without a really serious problem of high inflation and big imbalances in terms of like companies having excessively high inventories and excessively high levels of employment. So those are things that tend to attenuate the magnitude of the decline.
But when economists say it's going to be mild, do you say, okay, it'll be mild?
Well, you know the old saying, history never repeats, but it does rhyme. So there are things that will be similar to prior cycles, but there will also be things that are different. For example, as everybody knows, we've got a severe housing contraction that's been underway for some time. Far more severe, I think, than we've probably experienced prior to most recessions. And we're still sort of exploring exactly what impacts that's going to have on the economy. Now, the saving grace is that that contraction began in the middle of 2006. And so a lot of the excesses in the housing market have already been vented. We've seen the level of new construction activity fall precipitously, and that's prior to actually getting into recession. So one way of looking at that is that however far away the bottom is, it's a lot closer now than it was a year and a half ago. So in some sense, that could actually be comforting.
President Bush tends to be very sunny when he talks about the economy. It turned heads when he gave a speech in Chicago a couple of days ago to a business group there and began to voice some fear, some concerns when he said recent economic indicators are turning darker. Let's listen, Greg.
We have a strong foundation in our economy, but we cannot take economic growth for granted. That's what I want to share with you. I understand that while there is a foundation that would be the envy of a lot of other nations, we cannot take growth for granted. We confront economic challenges, from the downturn of the housing sector to high energy prices to painful adjustments in some of the financial markets. Recent economic indicators have become increasingly mixed.
Greg Ipp, why do you think the president is standing up now and making a comment like that? I mean, that's the kind of thing George W. Bush doesn't like to say unless he feels he has to.
Well, I'd put out three possible reasons, Tom, with the caveat that I'm not a political expert. Well, I'd say number one, that he's probably aware that if he sounds too sunny and ignores some of the negative news out there, then rather coming across as an optimist, he'll simply come across as out of touch. And I think that's partly reflecting the influence of Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, who's been very much a hard-nosed realist when he's been assessing things like the housing market since he became a part of this administration. Secondly, Bush isn't running for re-election, so the incentive to try and put a happy face on everything is perhaps a little less pronounced there. And third of all, he's got an agenda here. He would very much like to make his tax cuts permanent as part of his economic legacy. And by sort of emphasizing the risks to the economy now, he in some sense hopes to raise the stakes in the coming battle with Democrats over the course of fiscal policy. He would like to lay down a marker that any congressman who allows those tax cuts to expire is adding to the risks to the economy.
So there we are, the table's set. We've got the economic indicators. We've got a political backdrop. We'll look more at that. Greg Ipp, chief economic correspondent for the Wall Street Journal, and see his blog at Real Time Economics in Washington. Greg, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Now to two economists with their own views of what's going on. First, from Chicago, we're joined by Robert Gordon, professor of economics and social sciences at Northwestern University and a research associate with the National Bureau of Economic Research, the outfit that formally tells us if we're in a recession or not. Robert Gordon, welcome back to On Point. Good to have you.
Hi, Tom.
And with me in the studio, Alan Sinai, chief global economist, strategist, and president of Decision Economics Incorporated, former chief global economist and managing director of Lehman Brothers Global Economics. Alan Sinai, always great to have you as well.
Nice to see you, Tom.
So we may have a bigger bear and a smaller bear here. Robert Gordon, let's go first to you in Chicago. Do you see, what do you see? Are we in recession? Are we headed into recession? Big, shallow, deep, and can we predict it any better than we can predict the outcome of the New Hampshire primary?
We are not at the moment in a recession, but we may be very close. Let's step back and just review quickly those reasons why the economy is under such pressure, and then at the same time why the economy is typically so resilient. We have oil prices near $100 a barrel. We have a housing slump that has already cut housing starts almost in half from where they were 2 years ago, with more to come given the difficulty of borrowers in getting mortgages and the great overhang of housing inventory on the market. And we have a new credit environment in which it is harder to get a loan to borrow money for almost anything, not just for housing, but for automobiles and other purposes. The great support to the economy given in the 2001 to 2005 period by the ability to refinance your house, betting on higher home prices and taking cash out of your house that buoyed consumer spending during that whole period is now over. Now, why should we be cautious in predicting a recession? It sounds like it's almost inevitable. Every previous recession has been preceded, with maybe the moderate exception of 2001, by a sharp spike in interest rates. The 1990 to 91 recession, as mild as it was preceded by a federal funds interest rate of 9.25% a year before the recession started. That's not happening this time. Interest rates are already going down, and long-term interest rates in particular are historically low. We have normally GDP growth is positive because jobs are created. That creates income. The income creates consumption, and that creates more jobs. So we have normally a virtuous circle. We have to have a very sharp set of shocks to slow down that feedback loop and make it negative. Of course, it is possible for the loss in jobs to create a drop in income, to create a drop in consumption. That is quite possible. It normally takes a very large shock to the economy.
Hold that thought, Robert Gordon. I want to get the balance of your view there, but let me get Alan Sani in just for a second before the first break here. There's a kind of mild view, maybe we'll even dodge the bullet, and if we don't, it doesn't sound too catastrophic. Alan Sinai, is it as, well, I don't know, comforting as all that?
I think it's a rather bleak prospect. At the moment, I would say we are in a recession-like situation. Technically, you can't say we're in a recession on the kinds of indicators that the National Bureau of Economic Research uses. I think some of them may be a little bit outmoded, but in point of fact, in terms of a deteriorating labor market, in terms of falling growth in revenues and sales for business, in terms of how people feel and consumer sentiment, what businesses expect, how the markets are acting, and a bunch of other measures, it is practically we're in a recession.
So perhaps we're in effect in a recession now, or in as much as?
Technically, the odds are we're going to end up in one, but I can't make that call now. But it's easy for me to say it's a bad scene. Things aren't good. People feel lousy.
And if we
it's
go
going
there,
to get worse.
Shallow and short, deep and long?
Deep and long, not on GDP. GDP doesn't really tell us what it's like out there in the economy. On a GDP basis, which we technical economists follow and watch, you can say that those recessions of 1991 and 2001 were mild. But in reality, they were not mild. They were bad.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about fears of a looming recession that may already be upon us, how bad, who gets hurt, and what the options are now for the U.S. economy. Robert Gordon, economist, joins us from Northwestern University, joins us today from Chicago. Alan Sinai with Decision Economics is with me in the studio. Robert Gordon, you see reasons for hope that we'll dodge it here. Alan Sinai says we may already be there, in effect, deep and long, but not on GDP terms. It starts to get confusing for the ordinary person. Is it statistical or is it the way we live that determines this?
Well, first of all, you're putting too sunny a cast on my sort of balanced view here.
Oh, dear. Okay.
The economy has
straighten
been,
me out.
Okay, the economy has been hit by big shocks, namely oil prices, housing, and the credit environment. The economy normally is resilient, and I also said that past recessions have all been preceded by relatively high interest rates, mm-hmm. which is not true now, mm-hmm. and in particular, the mortgage rate on the 30-year typical fixed-rate loan is pegged to the 10-year Treasury bond rate, which is only 3.75%, historically extremely low, both in relation to inflation and just by itself. So there are going to be people out there who are attracted to refinancing their existing mortgages. Some people with adjustable-rate mortgages that are being hit with higher rates are going to be able to switch into fixed-rate mortgages. So it's not as big a disaster as it might otherwise be. The problem is for the Federal Reserve in maintaining a low-interest rate environment is that they are increasingly ignoring the rather major flow-through to our inflation of the higher oil prices and also the higher food prices, stemming partly from mm-hmm. ethanol and the demand for corn. So the Fed is on the verge of essentially abandoning its inflation target in order to try to prevent a meltdown of the real economy.
And how does that cycle back if indeed inflation takes off as they try to prop up growth on the other end?
That's eating into consumer buying power. Consumers are facing higher food prices, higher prices at the pump. And I might add that gasoline prices around the country have not yet reflected the full impact of $95 or $100 a barrel oil. There is more increases in fuel prices to come. For people who live in New England, as Alan will tell you, they use heating oil, not natural gas, and the price of heating oil feeds directly into a drain on their budgets.
Alan Sinai, we heard President Bush saying in his remarks, the bit of tape we played there, the foundation of the American economy is strong. Now, of course, presidents say that, and perhaps it's entirely true. But I think a lot of Americans look around these days, they see deficits, they see what the trade balance has been, they see jobs going overseas, they see what we're developing economies taking on high technology, and they wonder if our foundations are indeed strong. They see our big, big banks going overseas hat in hand looking for billions to bail themselves out. Are the foundations of this economy strong? Is that a fair, you know, assessment?
No, I think they're strong. I think they're being threatened by a number of major seismic shifts and huge changes in global trends that are shifting who's got the money and who doesn't, who's got the opportunities and who doesn't, and we're on the losing end of that at the moment. But it's strong, and I think the fact that our people are concerned is a good sign because that will wake us up and we'll get to those kinds of things. I think their unease, though, which a year or so ago was more Iraq, international, mm-hmm. when the facts on the economy were much better, the public discontent mood. Now there is definitely, and they've got it right, you know, the guts of the instincts of the ordinary American are really all wise, I think. And they feel what is really going on, it's deteriorating. And we are in the early stages of that. We haven't seen the worst of this downturn. Now, expansions don't last forever. Mm-hmm. Recessions come and go. Mm-hmm. We should keep that in mind mm-hmm. and not panic over what's going on. But we are threatened. We are damaged in the short and long run. And the long run answers and the kind of thing you're really alluding to, subject for another talk I show, I think that's something the American people have to be they're instinctively very aware of stuff that's going on, like the selling off of chunks of our companies to sovereign wealth funds from around the world who have a lot of money.
Because sovereign wealth funds, that is foreign governments who will now own big chunks of our major banks.
Sure. They're foreign exchange surpluses of countries like China, Japan, Korea, Brazil, far dwarf what we have. They've got the balance sheets now. We don't.
It's hard to feel at ease with that. Let's hear from our listeners. Al's calling from Sterling, Massachusetts. Al, you're on the air. What do you see out there?
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I'm an engineer in Massachusetts, a professional engineer, and I'm involved in the, you know, commercial development, housing development, all that type of work.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Engineer. And just a comment that your experts there, and I respect them, are sort of parsing these their professional professorial terms on recession, are we or not. I'm telling you on the street, we're not in a recession, we're in a depression. There is just no cash, nothing moving, and companies are dead, and people are hurting who are in any way associated with that development type of business.
Al, I don't see people selling apples and pencils yet on the street corners.
Well, I know, but you're maybe not a person there who's paying his bills dependent upon, if you're a carpenter or a builder or someone like that. I'm telling you, everyone's just hanging on. There's not a lot of cash at all on the street. That's the problem. And even for people who have good projects they want to do.
Robert Gordon, here's Al. He's an engineer. His work touches the housing industry, and everything that touches that is really feeling the pinch these days. He certainly is. I mean, how bad could that get?
Oh, I've been a big pessimist on housing for a number of years. There was a tremendous amount of excess. I listened to a news radio station in Chicago, and I would guess that 4 out of every 10 commercials are for mortgage brokers, and I can almost recite their jingles and their slogans.
Even now?
Even now, they are still trying to get people to switch from flexible rate mortgages to fixed rate mortgages, and I said that's not entirely implausible given mm-hmm. how low the long-term rate is. But when I listen to Al, I think, okay, housing is 5% of the economy. Housing starts, that is construction of residential houses, has fallen by half already in the last 2 years with more to go. I am not surprised to hear Al say it's a depression out there for anybody remotely involved with construction. But that's only 5% of the economy. Exports, which are booming, are 11% of the economy. So let's look at Boeing and find out if they're going to be raising production and hiring more people. There are offsets. How it's all going to turn out depends on whether the consumer, which is 70% of the economy, is sufficiently squeezed by the inability to borrow and by loss of jobs, which really hasn't started yet, to cause this to be a major event.
Let's, Alan Tani, I'll get to you on this, but let's hear from Gene in Shelburne, Vermont. Hi, Gene, you're on the air.
How are you doing?
All right.
Well, I'm among people who aren't doing all that well. I guess I'd probably technically be classified as poor, but I see it all around me. And what bothers me about this discussion you're having is that you're kind of ignoring some of the bases of what's brought all this about, and that has to do with shipping all the industrial work. I used to work at an auto factory, shipping out all the industrial work, and also this cute little thing that happened several years ago. I think there was a reference to it made a few minutes ago about people being conned into refinancing their homes, and they're losing their homes in droves. And I think that they're going to try to, the government's going to try to do something about it. But what are they going to do, really? I mean, the only thing they can do is just saddle us, the rest of us, with more debt, you know. And that's not a good way to run an economy. That's not even a sane way to run an economy. And I don't like to call people insane, because I don't think, like, for example, Bush and his group, insane. I don't think they're insane, but I think that permeated with greed, you know.
Gene, let us pick up your point on what happened with subprime housing loans, the bank manipulation of that, the bank's manipulation of that whole realm. Alan Sina, there is a large school of thought out there right now that, you know, we had a bunch of people who made out like bandits during that half dozen years when all the rules got bent and thrown aside, and maybe now the rest of the country pays the piper for that.
We're paying the price for an excessive housing boom and an asset price bubble in residential real estate prices. Very low interest rates and a very permissive Fed helped to feed that, plus our demands. And then the system invented a lot of new instruments that helped us lever and extract through the loans and the cash out financing a lot of money. And we spend money like mad when we can get it as Americans, and that bid up the price of homes, and it got excessive, the credit's excessive. This is a classic bust in housing. It's a bust. It's not a recession. It is a bust from classic excess, and the credit excess is a bust. And asset prices, though we can't technically say it's an asset price bubble bursting as an economist, I think we're in the middle of an asset price bubble bursting. Now, what does it mean? It means that home prices are going to keep going down a lot more than people think. And that will feed into the consumer's psyche, because we're not going to feel good when we go find out our home isn't worth what it was before. Mm. We'll feel even worse if we can't get jobs the way we did before. Consumer sentiment already declining can get worse. Those are two negative fundamentals. We can't get money out of our homes, the bulk of people now, the way they did before. That hurts. You have rising inflation, food and energy inflation. We all have to pay for that no matter what. It takes away from what else we have to spend. What do you have left? Jobs and income. And the last jobs market report was pretty negative. So the fundamentals around the consumer, and Bob Gordon is absolutely correct, that is the key. Bob, I think in real terms it's 71, a little over 71% of GDP now. So that's the bulk of the economy. Mm. If the consumer goes, so does the economy. The thing about consumer spending is, over time, it grows at an astounding rate, 3.5% inflation adjusted over 45 years. Mm. If consumer spending grows at only 2%, it's going to feel very, very bad. We won't see GDP go negative because it's 71% of GDP, but 2% compared to trend 3.5 is a huge shortfall in consumer spending, and I do believe something like that's going to happen. The consumer is going to go down very much in the pace of spending.
Robert Gordon,
let me add something.
Yes, please.
To Alan's diagnosis of the housing boom and bust, and that is Alan Greenspan looks much less like a maestro today in retrospect than he did when Bob Woodward wrote a book of that title about Alan Greenspan's regime, because not only did Alan keep interest rates too low for too long, but he completely turned his back on the need for the Fed to step in and pull together the federal regulatory agencies and shut down this subprime mortgage activity. The late Ned Gramlich, who was a Fed governor, who sounded the alarm bells about the potential dangers of the mortgage market and the mortgage agent activity, was ignored by Alan Greenspan. And I think we will live to regret that for a long time.
Let me ask you about the implication. Again, our last caller, you know, feeling sort of manipulated by the bankers and the way they jumped in maybe to the breach that Alan Greenspan helped open or leave open there. A lot of economic populism on the presidential campaign trail now. John Edwards in particular, you know, beating up on corporate greed like crazy in language we haven't heard for a long time. But then he's coming in, you know, second, third in the voting so far. What do you think about a message like Edwards in this season when we're maybe looking at a recession, Robert Gordon? Does it make sense to you? Does it sound beyond the pale? Should Americans be, you know, up in arms about the way the economy's been used and abused?
Americans, when polled, say they distrust government.
by a margin of 80% saying they distrust to 20%. When asked the same question about big corporations, only 20% distrust big corporations and 90% admire large companies like IBM and General Electric. So there is not a widespread view out in the country that the problem with our economy is large corporations. That's something very impersonal. There's also remarkable tolerance in the American population to let people get rich without insisting on taxing them at relatively high levels. This is the big phenomenon of the Bush tax cuts, where we had 90-90-90. The top 1% got a $90 billion tax cut. The next top 90-99% got another $90 billion. And all the rest of the population, the bottom 90, got a $90 billion tax cut. So all of the goodies under the Bush administration went to the top. And what we're going to see is a big debate in Congress this year, particularly if the economy weakens, as Alan is predicting, into a recession, to come up with a fiscal stimulus that goes directly to the bottom half. And that is very easy to imagine how that is done, and many people are already calling for that kind of bottom-oriented tax cut.
With the Democratic Congress, it could happen, but there's President Bush. That's not what he's pushing for. Let's go to John in Newburyport, Massachusetts. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Good.
I'm a financial analyst and a former mortgage broker. We all know how that industry went. I've been looking at balance sheets and income statements for the better part of 15 years. I'll tell you that there are really big changes in the works at Fair Isaac. Not sure if you're familiar with that. That's the company that's responsible for determining consumers' credit worthiness.
Oh, everybody's thinking about that. Okay. Well, what kind of changes? With what implications, John?
Well, we're going to see a shift towards those with really super good credit, given extra leeway to borrow. But the people that are in the middle or on the lower scale of the credit score are really, really going to get squeezed. And I think, recently we saw a little news bit about credit card debt soaring. And that really concerns me. I mean, you used to be able to refi your house and buy a Beamer because, your neighbor has a better Beamer. So let's refi the house.
But that could pinch consumers even more if the credit rating agencies toughen up on them. Alan Sinai, how about it? Does it reduce the impact, the leeway of Ben Bernanke and the Fed, if the banking industry itself is tightening up on, its willingness to extend credit, whatever interest rate he sets?
They have less. They can do less for the economy. They have interest rates they can control. They can pump in liquidity as they are doing. It's into the banking system. We're getting a generalized credit restriction out of the banking system. First, it was in the housing mortgages. The top credits will get their money. But we're also getting out of the non-bank financial intermediary world. And those institutions, the private equity funds, the venture capital funds, the investment banking brokerage firms, largely unregulated or unsupervised, it really provided much of the credit that fueled our expansion and our new business expansion. They're huge. We don't even know the extent of it because it's not transparent. And their balance sheets are contracting now, real estate going down, the stock market going down. You see the deals being canceled. That's another source of credit restraint that snuck up on us. It's the opposite to what went on in that big boom, where we had debt finance balance sheet expansion levering up all aspects of our activity. Now it's going the other way. That is what I don't sleep well at night, because that's the kind of thing, if it gets bad enough, that could give us really a very severe recession, not just a mild recession on anybody's measure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about fears of a looming recession. Maybe it's already here. So how bad? Who gets hurt? And what are the options this time? Robert Gordon joins us from Chicago, professor of economics and social sciences at Northwestern University. And with me in the studio, Alan Sinai, chief global economist at Decision Economics, Inc. Right now, Michael's calling from Woodbury, Connecticut. Michael, you're on the air.
I wanted actually just to give some comments to Alan Sinai. I've learned so much from reading him over the last 15 years. I changed me from a radical to a conservative, I swear.
All right.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'll take that as a compliment. Thank
Learning
you very much.
At the knee of Sinai. Okay, what do you see, Michael?
Well, I'm in the antique business, and we're at the, in our type of antiques, we're, you know, at the end of the discretionary money, and we long ago figured out being approximate to Greenwich, Connecticut, and Manhattan, that we should market to the top, you know, 1% and 3%, you know, no lower than 3% of the income earners.
And do they look like they're at the end of their discretionary money, even Greenwich, Connecticut, Michael?
We were on our way to a record year last year, the first three quarters, and in August, I mean, with that first leak of subprime, I think it came out of a small regional U.S., a French bank, and I was over there shopping for antiques, and which I could not buy because, you know, of the euro.
Weak dollar.
By the time I got back here, it was well on its way, and the door slammed, and you know, the top income earners have put, you know, projects that we were working with them on they just put them on hold. That's it.
Okay, here's
clients just said, we don't know whether we're going to be in business next week. You know, so
here's an interesting reality check, Michael. I'm glad you call and raise it, Robert Gordon. Michael sells, sounds like, pretty fancy antiques to Greenwich, Connecticut, and hedge fund guys. If they've been doing so well for so many years, can they really be at the end of their discretionary income? And what does that mean for the economy?
Well, we know that from the stock market, that the biggest victims in terms of industry stocks besides the home builders have been the financial sector, because there is all of a sudden enormous distrust of formerly stalwart institutions like Citibank. So it's not surprising to me that there is some caution in Greenwich, Connecticut. Some of those people may have to give up on their third beamer, so to speak. I'd like to get back to this issue of what kind of recession we're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty evident we're going to eventually have one. The only reason I sound optimistic is I don't think we're there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, I think, four choices: short and shallow, long and shallow, short and deep, or long and deep. And we've had, typically, post-war recessions have been short and deep. That is, they've lasted maybe 9 months. There's been substantial decline in GDP and production, but it's over with within a short period.
Yeah.
My instinct, this one is going to be shallow but long, that it's just going to be an enormously long process by which the Greenwich, Connecticut people stop buying antiques and the antique dealer is possibly put out of business and stops buying groceries. And this
Michael, we hope not if you're still listening. But we wish groceries for your table. What does long mean on your economist scale? Is that
instead of 9 months, maybe 2 years. 2 years of growth perhaps below 1%. Some quarters may be weak positive and other quarters weak negative. And in that environment, we would have a very substantial increase in unemployment. You know, in the 2001 recession, as bad as it may have seemed at the time, mm-hmm. The unemployment rate barely went above 6%, and for a very short period. It used to be thought that 6% was normal, and so that wasn't bad at all. But we could well see unemployment gradually drift up to 6.5% or 7%, which did happen in 1991-92.
Alan Sinai, shallow and long this recession?
I think before you asked, I said deep and long. On GDP, shallow and long is probably okay. I want to reiterate again that GDP really doesn't tell us that much in terms of how people feel. Three-quarters of our economy are in housing and consumption. Exports will do well. Trade will do well. Businesses in the export business will do well.
Well enough to keep the GDP up even as the rest of the
economy? Could. Mechanically, we had the export improvement and the trade improvement slightly more than offsetting the drop in residential construction, because mm-hmm. it's even less than 5% of GDP now. So, yes, it can. But, see, exports are only 11-plus percent of the U.S. economy. So in a diffusion sense, when you take a look at the economy broad-based.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll give you another example. Healthcare is booming. Nobody will tell me or persuade me that healthcare won't continue to boom. We're short people in healthcare. Demand for medical services.
I just did my bit. Okay.
You did your bit. You're back in 6 weeks. You look great. You see all the construction around hospitals and all the people like me at my age will mm-hmm. need lots of people to wheel mm-hmm. me around mm-hmm. and take care of me. And we have third-party payment. It's going to boom. We click in our economy 30,000 to 40,000 jobs a month in healthcare. That's probably going to keep on going. So the standard way we, we start to date a recession, declines in non-farm payroll jobs, we might not see it just because of health care. Health care is 16% of consumer spending now. Well,
but it's not going to float all boats.
So GDP can be held up by exports and health care, but for the bulk of what goes into it, it can be very, very bad. And that, I would submit, is the that's how I'm describing deep and long rather than shallow. Shallow in terms of GDP is okay, but just in terms of GDP.
And none of this happening in an ordinary year. It's an election year. It's all over the news. You can't miss it anywhere. This is going to factor in there politically as the government and contenders make their prescriptions for what ought to be done about it. Joining us right now from Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, is Steve Leisman. He's senior economics reporter at CNBC, watching that intersection between politics and what's going on with the economy. Steve, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So it's happening in an election year. Already we're hearing, calls. George Bush is talking about extending the tax cuts. Democratic Congress talking about some kind of stimulus package. What do you see coming down the road if recession talk and reality just gets louder, Steve?
Not very much, Tom. I think that the fact that it is a recession year almost guarantees that Washington will do what it inevitably does in the face of recession with attempts to create fiscal stimulus, which is do it too late. We had a kind of rare occurrence in the early part of this decade when the stimulus actually came in time. And the reason is because, as you remember, President Bush was proposing tax cuts for a completely different reason, which was to return the surplus. He then deftly kind of pivoted politically and then proposed that as a response to the recession.
Yep.
So it was kind of in train before for a different reason, and it ended up coming reasonably well on time. I suppose your two esteemed economists there would debate its effectiveness, but certainly it came around the time. There's almost no chance of that happening this time, given the dynamics in Washington and the dynamics on the campaign.
So there's the Republican urge, the Democratic Party urge more typically to put money in people's pockets, maybe further down the income train, and maybe, quite concretely, $500 or $1,000, some kind of rebate or something. What about that this time, Steve?
Well, it's certainly out there. I mean, Obama's out there already with a $1,000 middle-class tax cut on the table. Hillary Clinton has proposed a series of tax sort of more targeted things for retirement, savings, education, and has said that if stimulus is needed, she would support it. We had Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson on our air for an hour Tuesday of this week, and he said the president has tasked him with coming up with options, but it's not clear to me how far along Washington is right now. The president has been more sort of trying to get his legacy more in order when it comes to the deficit and the total public debt that he's leaving as he leaves office, which is just about doubled, more than he is actually thinking about raising the deficit. But my guess is he would do it. I think you're right that they're very far apart, that ultimately what Bush would like to see is his tax cuts cemented. The Democrats want to get rid of those upper-income tax cuts and change that over to a middle-class tax cut. That's why I don't think the two sides come together here.
Larry Summers, the former Treasury Secretary and Harvard president, said, get a package of stimulus together right now. Be ready. Let's go. Greg Mankiw, who was a big advisor to President Bush, now at Harvard as well, saying keep stimulus out of it. Leave it to the Fed, where there's less political pressure. Who do you think takes the lead in responding here, Steve?
Well, I think Greg Mankiw, if I could just for a minute, and you can ask Alan and Robert Gordon about this, but Mankiw echoes the idea which is out there in economics, which is that fiscal stimulus generally arrives late. Let the Fed handle it because they're able to more carefully get it there more quickly and more carefully target it over time. So that's why I think what Greg is saying. And the real dynamic, maybe the best thing that's happened for the prospects of fiscal stimulus, is Dodd jumping out of the race.
Why? Chris Dodd of Connecticut, why does his withdrawal affect it?
Well, he was out there on the campaign trail, and we had heard a lot of rumblings from Treasury about the inability to get Chris Dodd on board in almost anything they wanted to do. If you listen to Barney Frank speak, it's a very interesting, odd couple that Barney Frank speaks well of Paulson. Paulson speaks well of Barney Frank, but Paulson and Treasury do not speak well of Chris Dodd. He was out on the campaign trail. Now that he's dropped out of the race, it'll be interesting to see about whether or not there's a little bit a quicker movement on some of the housing things that are in front of the Congress, and maybe even the ability to get together on a stimulus package. But again, I'm very skeptical.
With
there.
These two in the House and Senate kind of in the lead on congressional response, Steve Leisman with CNBC, thanks very much for joining us there.
Sure.
Robert Gordon,
can we talk a bit about politics?
Yes, and please, and the Fed too, if you would, in Bernanke's capacity.
Just about to make this point. Monetary and fiscal policy both have lags, but they're quite different. The lag in fiscal policy is getting the administration and Congress to agree on anything, and with the very, very narrow Democratic majority, I think it's very plausible that nothing significant will happen. So the lag for fiscal policy is agreement, but then you can put money in the households' pockets immediately with any kind of tax cut that can be can cause a reduction in the taxes that are withheld out of people's paychecks. So their after-tax income can be raised immediately. Let me point out, though, that the very bottom third of the income distribution don't pay any income taxes at all. And the only way to have a fiscal stimulus that affects the entire bottom 70-80% is to have a temporary cut in payroll taxes. Everybody pays payroll taxes. That would be, I think, a radical enough idea with the sanctity of Social Security that it's very unlikely to happen, but it surely is the most effective way to put money in people's pockets. Then monetary policy, the Fed can decide instantly every 6 weeks or even in between its meetings to cut interest rates, but the lags in the effects of those interest rate cuts are enormously long. My latest statistical work says the lags are about 2 years, that what the Fed did in the fall of 07 won't boost the economy until 2009. So when people react to the Fed and the stock market gets all excited if there's a 50 basis point cut, they're way too optimistic about the impact on the economy over the next 6 to 9 months.
And as you say, that inflation threat is sitting there. I want to hear from our listeners on just that. Pasha's calling from Hudson, Massachusetts. Pasha, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Big fan. It's good to have you back.
Great to be back.
My biggest concern isn't just the threat of a looming recession, but it's that combined with looming inflation, with our already weak dollar and raising oil prices and low and lowering interest rates. It just seems to me like it will be difficult for us to steer away from a recession or out of it if we fall into one.
And maybe that tying the Fed's hands, Alan Sinai, what about it? Consumers see the inflation.
Right.
It's at the gas pump, at the grocery store. You know what the oil prices are?
We have right now a kind of stagflation, not like the 70s and 80s, but it's rising unemployment. It's high inflation. It's too high for the Fed tolerance bound. We'll see how they handle that. It's about the worst possible scenario for the economy because the increased inflation cuts purchasing power. That hurts growth. That hurts jobs. And if the inflation doesn't go away, and it won't go away right away under any circumstances, it stays that way. And worst, it ties the hands of the Fed. They have a dual goal, economy and inflation. What do you do? Well, they can't cut rates as much as they would if only the economy were their concern because they have an inflation issue. And so we don't get rates that cut them, but they don't cut them as much as they ought to get us out of the economy trouble. And they don't, if they cut rates, prevent the inflation or get the inflation down quickly. We rely on luck and hope that oil prices go down or a weak economy eventually pulls inflation down. The technical term is sticky high. We have sticky high inflation. It is really a difficult problem. Washington cannot help us out of this.
Let me make
a particular point of time. Anything that goes on fiscal-wise will only be a temporary bit of help, if indeed that.
Bob, what do you say?
Let's draw a contrast. We had very low, surprisingly low inflation during the boom of the late 90s because everything was going in the right direction. The dollar was rising, keeping down import prices. Oil prices were very low until 1999, and productivity growth was very strong. All of those have reversed. So there was no danger of stagflation in the late 90s, and that's an important reason why the 2001 recession was so mild. But look at it now. Productivity growth is slowing down, the dollar is falling, and oil prices are at record levels. So we have a repeat on our hands of 1974 and 1975, but a very mild version of that. The economy uses only half as much energy as it did 30 years ago, and productivity growth is substantially stronger than it was 30 years ago. But the whole scenario is a sort of mild repeat of that stagflation of the mid-70s.
What pulls us out? I mean, I've got a caller I can't get to here, Harry. He's in North Salem, New York, works for IBM, he says, global company, double-digit growth, and they're cutting salaries. and bonuses. What's the engine that pulls us out this time?
You know, the private sector, ultimately all of our – a lot of what goes on is self-healing. It's like illnesses. Mm-hmm. And the private sector and private sector decisions help us out of it. And that's the case that Greg Mankiw and others make for not
sector? Point to an industry, a sector.
Companies and individuals.
Name an industry that we can hitch our star to here.
Well, healthcare.
Geez, just
export industries and eating and drinking out. We're creating a lot of jobs. That's going to go too. That boggles my mind because that's going so well. It is not on an intermediate term basis, which goes beyond a year, year and a half.
Yeah.
It is not a pleasant sight. The pulling us out involves such major, in my view, things that we have to do on the societal Medicare, health care, long-run budget issues, on our tax system, and on how we run monetary policy, even the dual mandate objectives, that is just not something we're going to get to right away. I think we're going to languish for a good while here.
Sector-wise, Bob Gordon, I heard you say housing. Does it bounce and save us somehow?
Well, it can only go down so far. We have population growth. Eventually, this overhang of unsold houses will eventually get sold. It may take 9 months. It may take 18 months. But eventually, construction will come back, and that will start stimulating the economy instead of dragging it down.
And there we go. Ladies and gentlemen, hang on to your hats. It could be some kind of ride. Robert Gordon at Northwestern University, thanks very much for being with us today. And Alan Sinai, right here with me from Decision Economics. Great to have you in, Alan.
Nice to see you, Tom, and regards to you, Bob.
Listeners, good luck. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.